Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and honorable members. I think without much ado, the other members are going to find us on the way. Here is just a briefing, and then as a committee we wanted to know what is happening and what agreements we are having with whom, to what benefit those agreements are. And then we have read, and then there are questions we do not foresee a lengthy meeting. It will just be a matter of clarification, and then we go on with other matters of the committee. But before that, I think it is important for us to express our deep condolences to the tourist that has been murdered in Cape Town under very unfortunate conditions, and condemn what has happened in the strongest terms. And we further advise that the tour operators should take people, should also make sure that where we go, we know exactly that we are unlikely to get hurt. And as it happens in other countries, you get advised as to where to go, when, and so forth. I'm not saying that that was not done, but sometimes the question of the timing of the death and the location of the death, too many would raise questions. I'm not saying that it is the fault of anybody. You've got a right to be protected in any country wherever you go. But having said that, like in any other country also, people are advised to go to certain locations at certain times and not to go to certain locations at certain times. And we thank the response of the police. We have heard that they've already arrested 6 suspects. We hope that 2 suspects are the ones that are responsible. We do not know, but we are going to expect the cooperation, full cooperation as usual of the police, as they did during the World Cup, and the community as well. I'm sure that South Africa is going to be able to apprehend these shooters. But we should not lose sight of the fact that if this is the first murder of a tourist in the country this year, even after we have had hundreds and hundreds of thousands during the Comrades Marathon, hundreds of thousands during the World Cup and other events. Not saying that it is it makes the death less significant, but we believe that we are doing our utmost best to make sure that South Africa is safe. But all the same, one death is one death too many. We cannot afford that. Those are the opening remarks, and I would request then the presenters, the officials in attendance from the National Department of Tourism, is Mr. Dirk van Schalkwyk, Chief Operations Officer. Is it Operating Officer? Operations Officer. And Ms. Patience Mulukoza, Director, International Relations. Is it Mulukoza or Mulukoza? Mulukoza. Okay, because sometimes it depends on the language. No, thank you. You are welcome. And we, as I said, we just wanted to be clear and then take the matter further and know how to respond as Parliament as well. So over to you, Mr. Kalbeck and Ms. Mulukoza. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Walking in here, it almost feels like I'm getting back home with the family. So, just to say that I think we would like to add our voice to what you've expressed about the death of some of our tourists and the condolences to their families. Chair, the purpose of this briefing is to brief the Portfolio Committee on the recently tabled agreements, the one for Kenya, Egypt and Vietnam, and then also to clarify and indicate the benefits thereof. The need for negotiating bilateral agreements are stemming to the fact that it's to enhance our diplomatic relations and to add the political value out of that. So, in that instance, we're looking at mutual understanding, cooperation, the socio-economic development, and then strengthening our relations. The mutual benefits normally that we've taken out of these bilaterals is looking at tourism investment and how we can support one another, enterprise and business development, create an environment for that, exchange of information and research, joint marketing initiatives, and human resource development. The last point on this part of why we have bilateral agreements are the main objective of us entering into bilateral agreements to create an enabling environment for the two countries to interact and to set up a framework on a bilateral level of where they will cooperate. I think we also need to bear in mind that a lot of these bilateral agreements are also stemming from either state visits or other interactions that are taking place on a high level between two countries, and then the link between the specifics, like in this case, tourism. The Kenya agreement, just as background, Kenya is part of the European Union, the African Union, and the United World Tourism Organization. In the East African region, Kenya is a regional hub for trade, finance, and tourism. And then in our bilateral interactions with Kenya, also supports South Africa in multilateral organizations like the UNWTO. I think that the issue that we've got a seat and we're on the sort of the executive of UNWTO was part of Africa and Kenya's drive around that. The objectives of the agreement signed with Kenya is to increase tourism investment in both countries, to engage on a joint marketing initiative to increase tourism flow, to exchange information on research and statistics, and to build capacity between the two countries. The agreement has been tabled in Parliament, and just to indicate that we've also made copies available of the agreement, that this agreement was signed on the 17th of August 2009. The requirement is that we need to table this in accordance with Article 231 in bracket 3 of the Constitution of South Africa, and the status where we are at this stage is that we are in the process or we've developed an action plan for negotiation between the two countries, which will basically use the articles of the agreement to sort of get more meat to the agreement. And this will be discussed at the Deputy President's scheduled visit that will take place on the 25th to the 26th of November. Egypt is also part of the EU, African Union, and UNWTO. In the North African region, Egypt's tourism market has grown tremendously, and therefore South Africa can learn a lot. I think specifically around domestic tourism, how they are dealing with domestic tourism. They've got quite a lot of icons, and I think that is also part of why tourism is flourishing there. They also support South African bilateral organizations. In the objectives of that agreement is to increase tourism investment in both countries, engage on joint marketing initiatives to increase tourism flow, to exchange information, research, statistics, and building capacity between the two countries. An action plan is also under development in that case. Vietnam is currently building a stronger trade and tourism relations with the top economic powerhouses like China, India and Brazil. Other legal instruments that are in place to facilitate cooperation areas of mutual interest, and we're just adding that as a background, is that these intergovernmental partnerships, forums for economic trade, scientific, technical and cultural cooperation, joint trade committee, and agreement on the waiver of visa requirements for holders of diplomatic and official passports. Like in the other cases, the principles are more or less the same, or the objectives is increase investment, engage on joint marketing initiatives to increase tourism flow, to exchange information on research and statistics, and capacity building. And this agreement has been signed very recently on the 6th of October, and the action plan is currently being negotiated between the two countries that will identify programs to be implemented. And financial implications will only be determined in all the cases around the action plan once the action plan has been formalized. Okay, that in short is what the agreement is about, and I think we can sort of add some value, and this is why Patience is also here, who's been dealing with the international part. As you're aware, I'm a person with a green hat that has been moved to tourism, so I'm still in a learning curve like the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pascal, for a short and sweet presentation, which was very clear. I do not know whether my listener will look or not. I'm trying to to add something. Okay. Then, are there any questions?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks again to Ms. Van Skalkwyk for that presentation. These are obviously new agreements, which is why we're looking at them now. And when one looks at the objectives, they do appear to be in the line of general sort of principles, exchange information, statistics, come up with joint agreements of various natures. Okay. What I would be interested to find out would be, what are the actual tangible benefits that we would expect from these areas of cooperation? I mean, it's hard, for example, to think how Vietnam and South Africa could jointly benefit from a tourism partnership. But I'm no doubt there is such benefit. It's just that it's not clear to me right now what it is. So can you perhaps give us a few examples of how you see some of these projects and general principles translating into increased tourism into South Africa? I think that's really why you're doing it. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Sir President. I'll cover this question, the first question that I wanted to ask, that also, how are we going to benefit Indigenous African and South Africans. Also, the other thing that I want to ask, as the portfolio committee, how can we do oversight on these agreements? Because the department or the minister is going along to these areas. They don't invite us. So there's no way that we can monitor how good they are or how bad they will they be. So I think it would be proper, at least at some stage, that the e-portfolio committee is involved in this thing, so that we can be in a position also of attesting to them how good they are or how bad they are.
Thank you.
Next one,
I think I also have similar questions. On the objective to increase tourism investment in both countries, I'm interested in particular with Kenya. How do you how do you see this happening, increasing tourism investment? But the question I had when I read the Vietnam one, I know it's a general thing. This is just to understand how these agreements are processed. Unfortunately, I just can't get the page now. But I know somewhere it says that the minister must approve the agreement. Now I don't understand. For me, it is coming from the minister. It's coming from the department itself. So why does it become necessary for the minister to approve? I can understand about the president to approve, but the minister to approve the agreement. I would have expected that if the minister at the head of all this, who's leading the very discussion on whether there should be an agreement with one country or not. But it says here the minister must approve. And then, of course, I can understand Honorable Marcus's feeling. That's how I used to feel also much, much earlier in Parliament about these agreements. But my experience is that once these agreements have been entered into, there's really nothing a portfolio committee can do. Correct me if I'm wrong. And actually, in the document on Kenya that I read, it at on the part where the president has got to sign, it actually says once the president has signed, this cannot be changed. Am I wrong? Yes, somewhere it says once the president has signed the agreement, it cannot be changed. And according to the procedures, it usually comes to us, the portfolio committee, after the president has signed. And so it simply means that we must just listen and accept. There's really nothing we can change, unless the whole procedure were to be changed. But I must say, these are also very nice and simple, and they are very easy to follow. I appreciate that. In some cases, we find that these agreements are very complicated, with all the legal complications. And I'm just wondering, really, whether it's necessary for portfolio committees to involve themselves in those, because they've been gone into, they've been discussed, the legal people have looked into it, they've referred to various laws, you know, the country laws, and by the time it comes to the portfolio committee, as far as I'm concerned, all this work has been done.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first welcome the presentation. Mine is the issue of interest of on my side. In this presentation or this agreement, I'm aware that because this country has three spheres of government, and this spheres are interdependent. I know for a fact when my municipality went to Kenya some stage. Unfortunately, I don't know the details and the reason why they went to Kenya. But I wanted to check in terms of this agreement, whether the department of the minister himself, did he ever experience where the another sphere of government sign an agreement that may contradict our sphere of government. For practical example, maybe one municipality went to Kenya and signed their own agreement with Kenya. And now the national parliament come and the department or the minister sign an agreement. That agreement, at the end of the day, they sometimes contradict each other. That is my question. If you have ever experienced that from the department, then can you share that experience with us and tell us how did we deal with that particular problem? And how can we also, on the side of the department, as a legislature, try to get the correction between among all the spheres of government? so that we must not think till end of the day. See some more contradictions. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let us have a response from the department and then look at where execution starts and ends and where oversight starts and ends.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I just want to address the issue around the involvement of the Portfolio Committee first. I think this is something that the Portfolio Committee will have to take up in the process to say where they need to play the role, because just to say that the process of entering into agreements, normally you will have an agreement that's been signed between the Republic and the country on a high level that set the framework of who will participate in interaction with that bilateral with that country. Once that has been signed, and then the process starts of setting up bilateral agreements. Now, a bilateral agreement, just to sort of explain the process, is first they will set up a committee or a group of officials who will deal with the negotiations of the agreement. That agreement then needs to go to the state attorneys and to the international lawyers of the Department of DIRCO. Once they have signed off on that, it comes back to the department, and then the minister submits the request for that agreement to be signed to the president. The president is the only authorized person, if I could put it that way, who authorize a minister to sign an agreement if it's between countries. So based on that, then the minister has got the delegated powers to sign that. Not even a deputy minister has got powers in accordance with your rules and procedures and handbook to sign agreements. It's ministers that normally sign that agreement. So I think that's just to clarify. Although the department negotiates on different levels and in different forums, and DIRCO is normally the department who's driving this process through the diplomatic channels. So that is how it's been signed. And where the role of the portfolio comes into this, I think, is something that I will not sort of elaborate on. I think it's something that the portfolio company needs to do. The other issue that I think I need to bring to attention is that in accordance with the Constitution, an agreement like this only needs to be tabled in Parliament. So I think that if we want to have oversight beforehand, it's something that needs to be amended on that level. In that clause, there's certain that you need to sort of be rectified by Parliament, and then there's those that just be tabled. So I think it's issues that one just needs to bear in mind. So normally, a bilateral agreement like this will be tabled in Parliament in accordance with 231 of the Constitution. The issue of, and I think I'm first talking about the governance issues. The same applies with municipalities. I don't know in accordance with what they are entering into an agreement, because it's a other sovereign state. Except if they are entering into an agreement with a specific department, that can happen. But they can't enter into an agreement with the state, because the state is on a national level. And the same applies with provinces. So normally, like if you look at transparency conservation areas, it is between two countries, but it's normally within a province, and therefore the department will normally in transparency conservation areas make sure that the province is part of that process, because they are ultimately the one that will sort of drive some of their processes with your national protected areas agencies. But the signing of that agreement done by the minister based on what I've explained, delegated powers by the president. So I haven't got the details, and I think if you give me the details, we can look into that. But it might be that they've signed an agreement with the university, which is they can do, but not on a government-to-government basis. And I think the benefit one is the real one that one needs to look at. So in a lot of these cases is also where South Africa And in this house, like I mentioned, we don't want to play big brother, but in some instances, the knowledge we've got, like the grading council and what they've been doing, we're supporting other countries so that the standard of what is available in Africa is more or less on the same limit. In some cases, we are learning from other countries because they've also got similar sort of systems in place. But the idea is that if a tourist comes to South Africa and they move into Africa, that we maintain this more or less the same standard so that the concept of Africa is one. The other ones on ecotourism, there's a lot of interaction. If you look at Kenya, they've got a well-defined ecotourism, they've got the wildlife, and they've got certain issues there. They, for instance, have got tourism policing, which is something that we, part of the action plan, is something that we need to look in and see. In their case, if tourism arriving, they have got a policing forum, which they call tourist police, and how they work, and how that will fit into our system, because in our system, policing is done by SACs, and how that interaction is. So of our action plan, that's something we need to sort of look at and see how we deal with that. So normally your benefits originally start on a sort of not that tangible, because you need to set up the investment. In some instances, like there was another meeting where we sort of had meetings when we sort of market our TFCA's argument. That's where you get into those areas, because they in wildlife, and those investors would like to come invest, not necessarily in South Africa, but also in sort of our neighboring countries, and that creates a tourism chain between South Africa and Mozambique. I mean, and perhaps it's my sort of experience with TFCAs, is that when we opened Kirionda border post, I think in that first December, almost 1,000 tourists has passed the border gates between South Africa and Mozambique. So it's got some sort of deliverables around revenue for both countries. And I think that's the type of things we are putting in place. Patience can add some more. I think she's more acquainted around what is the real deliverable. But ecotourism is one. The issue of policing is something that we are looking forward, but also for us to sort of create an environment where we can also transfer some of the skills built up in the site to sort of create a sort of proper environment on the other side. Not that I'm saying they're not on the same standard, but I think it's an issue that we need to sort of look at. Chair, I think I'll there ask Patience if she just wants to add anything. Thanks.
Thank you. I think the COO, you've actually covered a lot of issues, but just to specifically focus, the question was also on Vietnam as to how do we see the benefit with Vietnam. In terms of the historical background of Vietnam, we share a lot of similarities. And where they are now at the moment, they're at a developmental stage where, like the CEO indicated before, that part of the agreement is to support each other, to build relations, because in multilateral organizations, you really need that support. And it's through programs like this that you kind of build relations. And they're very strong in ecotourism. It's a very green country. And South Africa is really, really lacking behind in terms of ecotourism. So it's something that we as South Africans can learn from Vietnam. But also because that part of the continent is really growing and growing very fast, it is very critical as South Africans that we target them, so that we ensure that we catch the market to come to South Africa. We all know that initially they should go to Europe and the US. But because of the dynamics now, if we don't use the opportunity to really focus on that continent, we might lose the tourism flow. More so because we are a long-haul destination. So in terms of our marketing strategy, we've got to be very clear as to when we see an opportunity, we should size it and make sure that we use it effectively. In terms of the alignment of international engagement, DECO has put down a strategy. Last week I attended one. where they're looking at how we should be aligning our work from local and provincial to national, because there's been an observation that there's a lot of duplication and so forth. So what DICO has done is they've taken control of the situation to say, if we are going to engage internationally, of course we've got to be led by country objectives, we've got to be led by departmental objectives, but how then do we make sure that there's alignment? Because also in terms of legal procedure, the local government is able to sign freelance agreement with the local municipality of various countries. So you find that within the twinning agreement and the national agreement, there is some chances of duplication. So that process is under discussion now. DICO is leading the discussion. In terms of investment for any other country, it could be, specifically, I know that the question was asked for Kenya. What we have done in tourism is we have developed an investment brochure. This investment brochure, it has tourism products that are bankable and feasible. So as we go along to various countries, we actually sell those products. A case in place, I mean, here in Cape Town, we've seen a lot of the Middle East investing in South Africa. So is other provinces where there's some investment that are happening within the tourism industry. So we do have a brochure with clear guidelines, how much the project is going to cost, what will be the implication, the social benefits, the environmental benefits, and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before 15, I think let me welcome Mama Vilaka of Uzgala. You are welcome, Mama. We heard about your absence, why you are absent, and we are praying for you. Thank you. 15.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to highlight some of the shortcomings that the province talk about. Always they seem to set when the national department of tourism go to other countries, they don't market them. That's why they go out and market themselves, because they see that it's so skewly market, as they said. They say skewly market. So I want to know, what is the department, did they have something or in their strategic plan that says they will also market the provinces that have got a tourism attraction? Will they put them on their plan so that we must see even in other provinces that they have this strong attraction of tourism? People from outside where they go and market, starting going deadline. And this one, I don't know if I'm out of order, you will correct me, Chair. I just heard about ratification. I'm new in this department, or I'm new in parliament. I just want to get more clarity. When you are in a committee, even things are wrong, you just follow it, because it has been, yours is just to sign and do that signing. I mean, you need to assist me, because I'm not quite sure. Maybe you, did we just put a stamp to say, hey, well done, and so forth. So I need to be given, because Mena, I'm not well convinced. I'm new. I mean, I'm speaking under correction that I will only give this big stamp and say, well done, without getting deeper, because it's already is the end product, whereby even if you've got something to say, you just agree, you don't say anything because it's already agreed upon. So I want, what is the other method? Thank you.
Okay, in fact, to the last question, I'm not answering it, but I'm just trying to clarify. It is up to us. For instance, this thing, you know, they come with these agreements, and then it's enhanced diplomatic relations for political value. Now, and then the second one would be mutual benefit on the following, tourism investment and so forth and so forth. Say this time next year or in 2 years' time, then we sit and say, okay, in terms of tourism investment, in Vietnam, what have we gained? How many tourists have we got from Vietnam? Enterprise and business development, that type of, how many things have we sold, have they sold, how many enterprises and so forth have developed it. So it is up to us to evaluate that after a year or so, and then to ask questions as to how much did it cost them, and then in terms of cost, what returns did we get. That would be my understanding. Human resource development, if they have better policing of rhinoceros, the mother tongue intervention today in my English. Rhinoceros, right? How do you police them? What experiences do we share? Are we having flights from Vietnam? If not, can we do so if we increase investment? But also to try and reach our political capital, political value into economic matters, because these countries at different levels, political levels, they want to support us. I think that is what they are trying to say. If we want to push a position now on any matter, it may be the way things are done internationally. We get support from Egypt, we get support from Kenya, we get support from Vietnam, even in other matters. I think that is what they are trying to do. But let them answer for themselves. I was just trying to use our language.
Okay, thank you. I will not respond to the second question. I'm a civil servant, and I don't buy the members' views on this, and I think they can deal with it. As far as marketing is concerned, just to say that the National Department has got the entity, which is the South African Tourism. South African Tourism is the entity, in accordance with legislation, who are marketing South Africa as the destination. So when we market outside, we market South Africa, and we market products, not necessarily a specific province, because that is the international domain. But in the governance structures, you've got all the provinces who are part of what we call our MIRTEC system. This is the where all the heads of the departments and the CEOs of the tourism entities meet. And this is where normally marketing and growth and all these issues are agreed upon of what SA Tourism will market. So this is where the provincial departments are giving their inputs. And that will then go to what we call the MINMEC meetings. That is where the minister and the MECs are. They normally sign up on those issues. So as far as marketing is concerned, it's an international marketing campaign that markets South Africa and markets specific products. They might market heritage sites, they might market your wildlife, they might market the business, the wine routes and those type of things, but not necessarily a specific province. I think that is one of the issues that I've indicated at a previous briefing with Portfolio Committee that we would like to clarify in the legislation. because in a sense, I think we, in my view, sometimes we are wasting money and perhaps taxpayers' money from a local, provincial and national level where we start trying to do one another's work. And I think one needs to define it, sort of be more focused on how we market it. The reality is that some provinces are using the opportunities better than others. And I think you've got those provinces that are less visited, and sometimes if you're not in the face, sometimes you lose out on the process. This is why in our strategic plan, we as a department are focusing on those less visited provinces to make sure that we get a mechanism in place where we can also get tourists into those areas and not necessarily Western Cape, Gauteng or KwaZulu-Natal, which are the most visited provinces. Perhaps the products are more sellable in those areas than in other areas, and it's for us to find a means of making sure that you create a product there. It's nice to have a product, but you still need to get there. You have infrastructure, like roads, like airports and those things to sort of create that environment. So, Chair, that in short is the issue about marketing. I think we've had that debate quite a few times, and it's something that the Portfolio Committee can assist us when we will bring the legislation to them in next year. Thanks.
I don't really have a question, but I just wanted to clarify us on the fact that this is the constitution really which binds all of us, the department and ourselves, to the procedure that is being followed. It's here. We can't change it and change the constitution, because it does say very clearly that the negotiating and the signing of international agreements is the responsibility of the executive. Both the negotiating, we can't be there, MPs can't be there, and the signing. So maybe we just have to accept it. And I think, as you say, Chairperson, maybe the main thing is for us, the portfolio committee, to monitor, you know, after those agreements have been made, to monitor how they are being implemented. And in some cases, as I say, it can be very complex. I think these are the easiest to follow that I've ever read, actually. They're nice and simple, and you can follow. Some of them have such legal, you know, challenges. It just becomes impossible for MPs to be able to follow. But I'm not saying that we shouldn't change, but we have to change the constitution. You have to ask.
Yeah, no, in fact, the executive, very executive that organizes a plan and a manifesto and performs that plan and executes it. And ours is to do oversight. In some instances, then there is that blurring. But also, these agreements are also in line with the South-South distinct relationship building, developing countries relating to other developing countries. I think we have said that in a lot of international fora, now it's being implemented. South-South. Vietnam is South, Kenya is South, Egypt is South.
Just also to assist the committee further with regard to the monitoring of this the international agreement. I think we need also as a committee to challenge the current oversight model of Parliament. So as to check exactly if we ratify an agreement, then what next? You know, what the current model is it proposing to us as committees of Parliament, as members of Parliament as well? And are there ways that are being proposed for us to monitor and do oversight on these international agreements? I'm not quite sure about that document. At what stage it is now in the office of the House Chairperson? Whether has it been finalized? Has it been adopted by both houses of Parliament? And if so, when is it going to implement it? I think that's also one of the issues that also we need to pick it up, especially as far as the issue of international agreements are concerned.
Thank you. I think it's more often an enabling and document trying to channel resources one way or the other to certain destinations. And then ours is to check whether indeed what did we benefit from the bilateral with Kenya. We've got the Kruger National Park. They've got the Serengeti, they've got culture, and then Egypt has got pyramids, it has got culture, it has got history, those things. I do not know what tourists, international tourists, want their African experience to be, but I think something has been researched, and then the combination of what they call African experience, they would like to see a pyramid, they would like to see Serengeti flow, they would like to see the Kruger National Park, that type of thing. And then combining then the experiences of the South into a bigger experience and a more exciting experience. I think that's what we are trying to do. They are trying to do, and then we go to this thing, oversee, and then say whether indeed it is more exciting. And then the only way that we evaluate that is by the number of tourists that have come to South Africa and then these destinations. Okay.
Yeah, I'm still coming with it. Mina, I hear you what you all we are saying, and then it's documented here in our Bible. So I was just saying, after that 1 year or 2 years, when we sit down as this committee, we say, no, ma, this rectification was not, it was just done, but it's not that, it doesn't bring anything to our country. We don't even benefit out of it. Because it's not, I'm not saying to the department, it's not always when you are alone there with people who can say to you, this is not right, this is right. I wanted to know, after such that long time we have realized that we don't benefit, is there maybe where the ministers or that cabinet can rescind what, after we have done our oversight, we thought this thing doesn't benefit us. Is there some way where we are able, or we are fearing that the other councils, they will say, we have betrayed them. There's no other way where we can resist when we think this thing is not benefiting us. Thank you.
Well, that's a political question. I don't think they are in a position to answer that question.
Easiest and the shortest route is for the portfolio committee to go to those countries immediately and go and check if what we have signed for is indeed worth our while.
Okay, now I get the point. I think it just enhances investments together with politics, and it's a combination of a lot of things. Where you don't benefit economically, you find that you benefit politically by votes, or you become more influential in the international stage and so forth. So sometimes you may see value in tourism, not see value in tourism, whereas there is value elsewhere when they vote us into the Security Council of the United Nations or so. That type of thing. Now, if we are through at Mangab.
Chairperson, not on the agreements, but on the points that you raised earlier on, maybe because you said it also in the presence of the department, about you know, what has happened in our country to people who came here hoping to celebrate their wedding, hoping to celebrate whatever. I mean, the fact that they had chosen South Africa for that very, very important event, which comes normally only once in a year, I mean, in a lifetime. I mean, it's shocking. I asked myself the question, are these the South Africans that we saw in action only a few months ago, in July and June, when we had the World Cup here? They're the same people, really. It's very sad. It's so evil. I just want you to know that you're not the only one who is thinking like that. We are all very, very shocked and very disappointed. And I don't know. I was just wondering whether there's a way in which I think the community, if people agree, can express this. I don't know whether you can express it in form of a motion, in form of a statement, in form of what I don't know, or in form of an article in the paper. Because I think really we need to condemn these things. And when you condemn them as individuals, yes, it's fine. People will read your letter and so on, but they will soon forget. But I think if, for instance, if we're to come from a group like this, to show that we just don't agree with this kind of behavior, this is very, very un-South African. It's evil. And I can imagine, you know, people overseas, when they read about this, and we are expecting them to come and flock into our country only from now on, actually, the festive season. Really? Will they feel safe? Will they feel that they really want to come? Who's going to feel safe? And people want to go to these areas that are outside, you know, like this outdoor thing, because it's nice. And it's different from their countries, it's different from the city life, it gives you that kind of inspiration. But now, you know, if we South Africans are going to treat our visitors in this place, I've never heard of anything like that. It's cruel, evil. It's so un-South African. So I was just wondering, then, Chairperson, whether it should end here in 3119, or whether there's a way, you know, probably how, whether this is possible or not. Not by a party, but by the committee, you know. A committee that is dealing with tourism, a committee which is interested in seeing this people come to our country, a committee that is supporting the agreements that we have just supported now, and hoping that people will keep on seeing South Africa as the best destination to visit ever, can't be regarded as the best destination if you are going to destroy life the way you did. I mean, the way whoever did it, but they are doing it as South Africans. So out there, people are going to say, these are South Africans. They're not going to say, these are South Africans. They're going to say, South Africans. Thank you, Chairperson. I've just expressed my own frustration with this man. Disgust,
right there.
Chairperson, just to add to what my colleague has just alluded, it seems it's becoming a tradition with Gugulethu. Because if I'm right, I remember the lady that was killed who had come to, you know,
to give South Africa visa. She was, that was gruesome killing. It was Guguletu. And even now, it's Guguletu. What is really happening? There's something going on with Guguletu which needs to be looked at. Thank you.
I think let us look at this as an exception rather than something that normally happens, because really any bill died how many years ago? So 10 years ago now or so. It's a long, long, long time ago. More than 10 years ago. And then this is only the second foreigner who died.
But Chairperson, it doesn't have to be just Guguletu. The hyenas operations that take place in South Africa are really very, very questionable. We can't say it was an isolated case just because it now has happened in Guguletu. A lot of other people get slaughtered all over the place. It is just that now we are focusing at Guguletu. And further to that, I am not sure whether I was overly overwhelmed by, you know, the incidents, because the lady who was commenting on TV about this, maybe I was overly sensitive. She didn't seem to be sympathetic more than to say, people must watch where they are going. That is the perception I got. I don't know whether other people felt the same. It was like people should watch where they are going. They don't just go gallivanting all over the place. They must have been, I felt it was a bit insensitive, especially said at this particular time.
I think also we've got a responsibility to protect the industry, in as much as we feel the disgust and I think we've got to have a balance in this matter. Krumbok and then
PM. Yeah, sure. I'm not sure how we got onto this point, but now it's a full-scale discussion, so I'd also like to make a point. I think my job is right to raise it, though. We spent 42 billion rand building infrastructure to welcome the world in June and July, and we actually did a very good job in promoting our country and changing the brand image of our country. But it only takes one incident, just one, and that entire thing is jeopardized. So it is deeply disappointing that so many people work so hard, and they're right down from Janie Jordan to the people who actually built the stadium, the lowly paid workers, everybody pitched in to make this a success and to actually create the perception of a tourist mecca. And now it's really been very bad damage indeed. So, I mean, purely from a nation's point of view, we've done ourselves a massive disservice here. And that's before we even start talking about the trauma that the surviving husband must be going through right now. I mean, I can't even imagine what it must be like to lose your wife on your honeymoon. And that's got to be one of the worst things that can happen to you. But the point is, what do we do now? And the members are expressing their concern. I heard people say, discuss things like that. It might be a good idea to take on board Manjobe's idea that this should actually be a multi-party response. And I think it would be good if there were a motion in Parliament saying that the entire tourism committee or portfolio committee, with support from every single party present, condemns what's happened, extends a sympathy to the surviving victim. And I think we should be doing something to ask what can we as a committee do and assist in order to make sure this kind of thing doesn't happen again. Now, I mean, this is a very high profile one because of the particularly tragic circumstances and coming so soon after the World Cup. I mean, I feel pretty stupid. I put out a press statement hammering the British media for suggesting that people needed to buy stat-proof protective vests. I mean, what I look like now is actually they were right. And when, at least for this woman, if I don't know how she died, but, you know, I mean, You understand what I'm saying? But maybe there's something more tangible that we can do, at least to indicate that from a multi-party perspective, we don't accept this and that there is some practical steps we may be able to take. I just really can't say nothing about it, and that's what I do agree with Manjoba. I think we need to take a stand, and a multi-party stand is the most effective stand we can take. It shouldn't be a DA, ANC, COPE, or whatever the IFP thing. We all actually feel the same way about this.
Okay. That is the proposal. Yeah, but at least we should choose the context also. We've got to be careful about the context. I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of tourists that have come to South Africa without anyone being madam for the whole year or 2 years. I mean, it's unfortunately this thing has happened. But looking at the picture as a whole, it wouldn't be odd for this thing to happen in Harlem, in New York, at 12 o'clock. It wouldn't be awkward for this to happen in Islam, in London, at 11 o'clock in the evening. So it's not only South Africa. It's other countries as well, other destinations as well. If you go to Lisbon, you go to Spain, you are told, don't go to that area, don't go to that area. And if you go, you take the responsibility. I do not know what about Kugulethu. I'm not saying that Kugulethu, people should not go to Kugulethu. But at the same time, I do not know how it happened at 11 o'clock at Kugulethu. It's difficult to explain, I think.
Maybe they were coming from Soli.
It raises more questions than answers. So I think we are happy that the investigators have already caught six people. We hope that these people are the people that committed the act, and that we can get more information from this.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not commenting on what all of you have said, but as we are this developing country, we must learn from other countries how do they deal with crime. We need to really, because in some countries you can leave your bicycle outside the shop, you can leave whatever and go down deep in town and you get your bicycle where it is. Let's still disrespect to our children while they are at school. We must make sure that even if we are together like this, we must talk about this respect of other nation or other colors, so that our kids, when they grow up together, as young as they are, they must know each other that whether we are black or green or yellow, we are one people that God has created. So it's just to instill respect to our kids, so that when they grow up, they must know each other.
Okay, let us close this matter and then have a break and then come back after tea.
Okay, are we now done?
Yes.
I think from the item number one, I think it is done. And then let us thank you and then perhaps ask for concluding remarks before we close.
Okay, thank you very much. I think once again for the opportunity to come to Parliament and meet the members. And we from our department side are on standby any time you need us to come and visit. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the good presentation. Thank you.
All the
Continue with item number 3, and that is the consideration of outstanding minutes of the 12th of October, the 26th of October, the 2nd of November, and the 9th of November 2010. We have received copies of those for consideration. Let us first start with minutes of the 12th of October. In fact, if you concentrate on number 4, page 4, the concerns of the committee. The committee was concerned about the concepts, definitions, and terminology that is used interchangeably in the industry, like tourist, visitor, and so forth. The second area was the frequency and the accuracy of data available to the public. That was the 9 million against 7 million that was discovered afterwards. And then the third area was update on statistics, which take too long to be available to the public. That is, we were still dealing with information of 2005 at that time. So those were the concerns. So when we adopt, we are adopting those minutes where we raised those two concerns. And then Honorable Kwarai says that it is a true reflection of the minutes. And I see no reason why perhaps we could raise an objection, but it is up to you.
No, second that, sure.
Seconded by Honorable Krumbo. So minutes of the 12th of October 2010 have been adopted. Then the next set of minutes is the 26th. Minutes of the 26th of October. It was a meeting with COCTA. Hello, Mama Suleka.
Come for the adoption of the new chapter. Thank you.
The issues here were, or should you read the minutes? Do you still want to read the minutes? The issue here was coordination of tourism in different spheres of government, COCTA, and then the concerns are raised there in page 3, and the issue of jobs, the issue of infrastructure, metros, service level agreements, coordination among departments, government departments, and the lack of private sector participation in local economic development. And then the committee resolved that it will participate in the discussion on the local government green paper. The green paper. So there is a green paper that you've got to look for. When the paper is available, the department will be invited sometime again in 2011 in order to assess progress in tourism development in local government. Then we considered the BRRR report, which has been passed in the House.
I'm just worried about that general you know, comment on the last bullet on page 4. Drop of page 4, lack of time of social participation in local economic development. This is some of the comments of concern. Is it not too generalized? I will say really that the private sector I participate, or I will say in some, or is it too common?
Oh, let us get a rephrase. Can't we say that our private sector was not participating in local economic development as anticipated or something like that? What was the agreement? I also don't remember now.
But I think the phrase we should probably say, maybe lack of some private sector to participate in local government. I think there are some private sector that participate in local government and LEDs of the municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether we generalize, because if you can go to other municipalities, you see that private sectors are do take a serious and a conscious part in the LEDs. So we better say some, so that you must not generalize in the that's all too.
Are you agreeing, Manjobi?
Mm, yeah.
Okay.
But I was just saying, I don't appear in the papers here, even where I sent apology when I was outside to Nagoya, I did send an apology. So I don't appear in the papers.
Yeah, I know that you send in apologies. Okay, that will be corrected. So let us adopt the minutes of the 26th. Then we engage basic education. We got a briefing and then our concerns were illustrated in page 3.
Same note, number E and F, we can just make it one, maybe to be only E. Because the same page, they're the same. Because this is planning of learners caused by the lack of infrastructure. So we can just make it one sentence.
I think the one leads on to the other, but maybe you should say lack of school infrastructural development resulting in declining learner numbers in tourism. I don't think you can leave the second part out. That's what concerns us. We have less people working in our industry.
Yeah, and then G as well. You see, the committee raised the following concerns that if you read the same sentence, teacher and career development. So, the committee raised the following concerns that, and then if you go to G, it should be there. It should be a sentence concerns that there was a lack of teacher and career development in the field. Are we agreed? And then this agreement that was tabled was the agreement that the agreements that we were called for consideration today. Yes, okay.
Thank you, Sir President. I move for the adoption of this minute with those corrections.
Okay. Moved. Any second? Then the last set of minutes before us are the minutes of the 9th of November 2020.
Move.
Let us look at number page 2. D. I think we need to rearrange the bullets there. Information technology infrastructure arrangements which are related to data management and integration to financial systems. Move with that to amendment.
John, just a little bit confused. Item 3 in the last minute talks about the agreement with Vietnam, but so does item 5 in the meeting before that. Did we in fact, or did you in fact, advise us 2 consecutive meetings, or was that a duplication? So I only remember it being mentioned once, but maybe I'm wrong. If you look at it, the minutes almost the same.
Item 3, page 3, at the bottom.
Okay.
just indicate, because there was some discussions there when you tabled that agreement before the committee. Then what you advised the committee was let's not get into discussion in that meeting. Let's wait for the meeting of the 16th, because there was going to be where the department was going. He was going to give us a full briefing on those. In fact, on all those three briefings. In fact, what you were trying you were trying to caution the committee not to entertain the agreement in that meeting of the 9th, because there was a meeting scheduled for the 16th, which is for today. Basically, that's what that is trying to reflect.
Yeah, so, Chair, I totally accept that, but that wasn't really what I asked. I was just asking, did we also do it in the 2nd? Because if you look at the minutes of the 2nd of November, on the very last page, item 5, it says the same thing.
Mm.
That's what I'm asking. I'm not disputing what Jerry just told us. I remember that as well. That's what happened.
Okay. The one who sent adopted. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Chairperson.
Yes,
sir. Yeah, it was the first time those agreements were brought here. When you said then they are here, that's for us not to discuss, because they're not going to be tabled by us in Parliament. It's here not for discussion, that's what Chairperson said that day.
Yeah, that's for the 9th.
It was the very first day those arguments were brought to us.
Yes,
Chair. In the first, on the 2nd, it was the two agreements of Egypt and Kenya, and subsequent to that, on the other day, it was the one from Vietnam. So the same response was for both nations.
Yeah, Chair, that's what I thought happened. But if you look what the minutes say, in both cases, it says Vietnam.
Oh.
You see where I'm going with it? I think the committee clerk is correct, but then the minutes should say Egypt and Kenya, not Vietnam, on the 2nd.
Thank you very much. Yeah, but before we close, I think this is our last meeting as a committee this year. And we are not going to have any committee meeting anymore. Other committees, because they've got legislation and other matters to pursue, they'll be going on. But before we go, I would like to thank everyone for the cooperation in the committee, from every party, and the secretariat as well. And we really appreciated your support. We know that quite often it was difficult, quite often it was demanding, quite often you had to prepare reports within a short space of time. You had to read them. There had to be feedbacks and so forth. And I thank you for that. And every member, I wish everybody the best during the constituency period. Do you want to say anything, Mr. Gumo?
Yes, thanks, Chair. You know, when we started out, we had quite a few problems with our committee secretary. But I'd just like to endorse what you said. Jerry Bottino has been fantastic. Even though I get my SMSs, you know, sometimes they wake me up, but it's fantastic to get all those reminders, and everything is done well, and it really is a pleasure working with him, and I do feel as a committee member that we're all treated very well and very capably by the committee secretary. We can also thank you, Chairperson, for giving us the democratic space to make our points. We never feel like we are in opposition here. I'm talking for myself, but maybe some of the other parties might like to comment. You know, it's good to have frank and fair interchange without feeling that you are in any way restricted. You've made it very easy for members of the opposition parties to feel that they have a full role to play in this committee, and I, for one, would like to thank you for that and record my appreciation.
Thank you. Mr.
The thing that has been said to me, owe ourselves a history, and that history is to maybe to organize a photo session for all of us. That's a better way of remembering each other, to say that we've been working together for such a good, as a good committee. I'm sure that we are the best committee in this. And we never have a lot of, even if we are debating daily, I never see any contradictions in ourselves. That is very important to us.
As
a person, I want to raise something that really we need to thank our research and our research committee, because even in this thing of the BRRR, there are committees that are still struggling now with their issues. They are supposed to correct and do that and do that. Then when I asked for our committee, how is ours, we were told that it is number one. So we need to give ourselves an applause. Thank you very much, Jerry, and our researchers for their work. Well done. And also let's thank ourselves, because we also made some corrections that made our team pass with no questions. Thank you very much for that.
Chairperson, I would like to just apologize on my behalf that I never had the opportunity to be with the committee for some time. But nevertheless, I want to direct this to you as our chairperson. The way you handle the portfolio committee, the seriousness, well, we've been to other committees, you can assess, you can make, and we have learned so much from you. You are such a strict principal. You never just let things just go our way. That is very good. Keep it up. To the secretariat, the SMSs we used to receive from the secretariat, they are so detailed. You just know exactly what was going to happen. Thank you very much to you. And to the researchers, oh, I remember when we were out on oversight, when things go, then the researcher would come up, and then we are covered somehow. We used to enjoy that one. And to our daughter, please do keep that one. And what I like, it is the welcome to us as opposition parties, Jefferson. You, all of you, you handle us as one. We never felt that, oh, Tina, keep that one up. That is wonderful. Even the committee, they're so friendly from the ruling party. That is good. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
I said she should speak on my behalf as well, but she hasn't, so I have to speak. Well, anyway, Chairperson, I also want to add my voice to what other members have said. It is true, the spirit of the committee is really very cordial, and we enjoy the meeting. I know I used to come to the meetings on Tuesday, and I was always late because of the flight from East London. But later when I realized that, number one, COPE has to be there, number two,
one also misses, you know, what is going on, I decided never again. So I arrive on Mondays just to make sure that I am in this committee. You can only do that if, for instance, the work of the committee is interesting and, you know, you find that you are able to contribute and gain from the work of the committee. So thank you very much, Chairperson, to you for conducting the meeting the way you do. We wish you more strength and luck in the future. We still have 3 more years to go, and there's still a lot of work to be done. To Jerry, I'm also saying the same thing. Actually, he's almost spoiled us. You know, you don't need to look at the committee meeting paper anymore, because you know on Sundays, Jerry's message comes, and you've got all the details about the meeting for Tuesday. And to the researchers and the staff, also to them, thank you very much for your cooperation. We're still going to be together, and hopefully we will make this committee to be what it is and what it deserves to be, all of us together. And also to the colleagues, the ANC, they're very, definitely very friendly. One of them calls me Makulu, and I accept that, and I am real Makulu here now. So it's very nice. Very, very nice. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Manjole. I'm amazed the way you perform in the committee. The age is 80. Are you more than 80?
I'm ready for
81. You are so bright. You remember things. It's fascinating. Really, sometimes when you look at reports and the detail that you follow, I don't believe at 80 I'll be having that capacity.
Happy just to be alive.
If we're alive, we call it that age.
Chairperson, you don't ask the latest age.
It was an answer, pardon.
To the secretary, thank you. And to the class as well, thank you very much for the support. We really enjoy the support. To PMG, we all enjoy the detail you give to reports that you give. They assist us also when we combine minutes, we read and then say, hey, but this is not there, what is there, and so forth. They support us. Thank you very much. We really value your support. So keep it up. You are an important spanner in our democracy. So, on behalf of all the people that are in the committee, I say thank you and thank you very much to all the parties, and particularly to my party as well. We cooperate, and then we agree to cooperate with everyone. I think that cooperation, let us keep it up. Thank you very much.